National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. As a matter of fact, I'm no expert in this area, but they were looking for a substitute moderator, so here I am. Before we get started, please make sure your cell phones are off or in the mode of vibration. And does anyone have any quick announcement to make for us? Okay, we'll get started, but I'll give 3 minutes warning to the speaker so that you know where you are. Our first speaker is Dr. Dawn Comstock from... Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
I apologize. Those of you that have seen my business card know how complicated it is. I'm with the Center for Injury Research and Policy at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, and also with the Ohio State University College of Medicine Department of Pediatrics. You can't hear me. Is that better? Okay. Better? Okay. I'm with Nationwide Children's Hospital. The Center for Injury Research and Policy is where this research was conducted. I'm also with Ohio State University. And I'd like to also say good morning. Welcome everybody for getting up so early and for walking almost to Coronado to be in this session today. There's the disclaimer. Today I wanted to bring you just a very, very small snippet of information from a pretty exciting project that we're working on with the American Camp Association, the governing body for summer camps in the United States. The project is called the Healthy Camp Study, and it's basically a surveillance project of injuries and illnesses among campers and staff members at summer camps across the United States. So just a little background, we know over 11 million children attend summer camp every year in the United States. And summer camp is one of those things that parents just kind of assume often that when they send their child off to camp, their child will be taken care of. They'll be healthy and safe while they're at camp, just like we often assume that our kids are going to be safe at daycare or at school or at church, Bible school, or whatever. Well, in reality, as we all know, all of the wonderful benefits of summer camp are balanced by a risk of injury. Kids go off to summer camp, and part of the normal childhood development is they test their limits. They expand and they grow both physically and socially. And anytime kids are testing their limits, they're at risk of injury. We've previously reported from the pilot study, from the Healthy Camp study, that the adverse event rate, that's injuries and illnesses, is at least 1.2 per 1,000 camper days. So every day that a child is at camp in the camp setting counts as a camper day. And we know that the consequences of camp injuries are far-ranging beyond the physical injury itself. If a child is injured at camp, they're missing out on the camp experience. That's a big part of it. There's also psychological stress. There's a financial burden on parents often. As well as for the camp itself, one of the reasons why the American Camp Association is partnering with us on this, not only do they want to make camps as healthy and safe a place as possible, but they also understand that high-profile injuries at summer camp are bad PR for summer camp. And we have an underwriter, a Markel Insurance Company is actually the underwriter of this project because they know that injuries mean insurance claims. So if we can prevent injuries at summer camps, we lower the number of injury claims as well. Well, the objective of this study was very simple, just to examine the epidemiology of injuries sustained by children attending summer camps in a national sample of U.S. summer camps. Again, this is the Healthy Camp study itself is a 5-year study. This last summer, we just finished collecting our third year of data in this 5-year project, but today I'm only going to be showing you information from the first 2 years. And obviously, with surveillance data, we can calculate rates of injury and characterize patterns of injury. That's the strength of surveillance. The tool that we use in the Healthy Camp study is Camp Rio. It's reporting information online, an internet-based data collection tool that was developed at my institution and that we've used very successfully in several different national injury surveillance studies over the past several years. It's a very simple, very inexpensive, very flexible internet-based data collection tool. And I'll tell you, going into this, one of the big challenges for me was the difficulty of creating a surveillance system for the incredible diversity of summer camps in the United States. I had no idea before I got started just how complex an issue as simple as defining what a summer camp is. There are camps where children go for one day. There are camps where children spend the entire summer. There are camps where kids, like computer camps, where they literally sit behind a computer all day, so it's just like being in a classroom. And there are extreme adventure camps where kids are out there climbing mountains and whitewater rafting and you know, doing ropes courses and many, many things in between. Also, the medical care available at summer camps varies from very well-developed healthcare systems at summer camps where they have physicians on site, camp nurses on site, individuals that are accredited in wilderness medicine, to a camp where they're lucky if they have anybody on site that even has a first aid certification. So we had to develop a surveillance tool that was accessible for use by any of these potential reporters, something simple enough for them to use that still collected data of high enough quality to be of use in research. And after a several-year process, we believe we've hit the mark now with Camp Rio. Our reporters are truly a convenient sample. We have over 200 camps, but it is, you know, straight up here, it is definitely just a convenient sample. However, it is the biggest sample in the widest geographic diversity of summer camps that we believe have ever been involved in this type of long-term surveillance. We ask the reporters at each camp to log into our internet-based site weekly and give us information about exposures, how many kids were on site each day, and information about the injuries. For each injury they report, they complete a very detailed injury report form that tells us about the injured camper, demographics, age, height, weight, things like that, information about the injury itself, what body site was injured, what was the diagnosis, what was the severity, and information about the injury event so we can look at risk and protective factors. So our definition is one camp day is literally one camper being on site for one day, no matter what their activities are. And the injury, we discovered that we had to actually have a different definition of injury for the resident camp setting compared to the day camp setting. In the resident camp, they said what was important to them was an injury that kept the kid out of normal camp activity for at least 4 hours and also required the care of whatever the medical personnel on camp was, even if it's that's just the camp director with a first aid certificate. In a day camp, they said, boy, you know, if we have an injury that's severe enough to keep a kid out of activity for 4 hours, we're probably sending them home to mom and dad. So for them, it was important to have a much shorter duration of impact. So at the day camps, it's more than 1 hour. Well, here are our results. Over the last couple of years, we captured 780 injuries that occurred at summer camps during nearly 2 million camp day exposures, an injury rate of 4.3 injuries per 10,000 camp days. And when we compare that to some of our sports-related surveillance, for example, we see that camps are a relatively very safe place compared to the injury rate that we see in, you know, for example, high school football or high school baseball. We did see that camp injury rates were higher at resident camps compared to day camps, significantly so. And here's where some of the findings started to surprise us a little bit. Again, we know from our sports-related injury that the most commonly injured body site is the ankle. Well, here in camp injuries, the most commonly injured body site was actually the head and face. And this includes everything from very severe concussions to simple bloody noses where they, you know, were in the camp nurse's office for a while, lacerations that required suturing, etc. After the head and face, it was the hand, finger, then the ankle and the knee. And the most common diagnoses are much more similar to what we see in sports-related injury. Sprains, contusions, wounds would be lacerations, punctures, any type of an opening of the skin. And then we were also a little disturbed to see that 15% of all the injuries in the camp setting are actually fractures. Well, looking more specifically, we see that ankle sprains are the number one most common injury, but then again, very concerning, followed by blows to the head. So 6% of all the injuries in the camp setting are actually blows to the head. And then we start seeing the fractures, sprains, strains. Well, as an injury epidemiologist, I want to find out why these injury events are occurring. Capturing them and reporting them is fine, but I want to prevent them. So what actually is going on? Overwhelmingly, they kind of fell, tripped, slipped was the main mechanism of injury, followed by being hit or struck either by someone or against something. Falling from heights, and another one of my colleagues at Nationwide, Lara Trifoletti, can talk in detail about bunk bed related injuries. Many summer camps have bunk beds, and often children that go to summer camp may never have been in a bunk bed before they go to summer camp. So that's a big risk factor for injury at summer camps. Looking more specifically, the activity is great, but you know, there are a lot of different ways that you can fall, slip, or trip. So looking more specifically at the activity, we see that sports and recreation account for half of all of the injuries. If you broaden recreation a little more further, recreation in the white pie there would be things like canoeing, doing ropes courses, things like that. If you broaden it to include just hiking, walking, running, jogging, you see that we're now accounting for a pretty large proportion of the overall injuries. And you do see that little pink sliver, which is prohibited activities. Remember, kids are pushing their boundaries at summer camps, and often the staff members at summer camps are really kids themselves. We see that the staff members at summer camps are sometimes as young as 12 or 13 years old themselves, and they're supervising children at summer camps. So it's not surprising that we have to look at prohibited activity as a risk factor as well. In terms of severity, you know, 46% of the campers were able to return the same day to full camp activity. Concerning, though, that 10% of the injured campers actually had to leave camp. They were unable to return to the camp setting for that camp session. That's obviously a pretty severe injury when you're talking about summer camp, because the whole point is for the kids to be there and have fun. And for the camp, this is very concerning, because a child who's injured severely enough to leave camp, you know, they may not come back the next year. Their brothers and sisters may not come back. There may be some bad PR. When we look more specifically at what activities were associated with those 10% of injuries that caused the injured camper to leave camp, we see again sports and games and recreational activities are very prevalent, as well as horseback-related issues. And this is concerning that 6.8% of the severe injuries were related to horses, because only a small fraction of the summer camps that participate actually have horses. Well, we looked even more detailed. These injury report forms are wonderful because since it's internet-based, all of the skip patterns are incorporated, so it's very low time burden to get a very large amount of data from the reporters. It lets us really delve deeply into the risk and protective factors. And in fact, we saw that in the severe injuries, again, those 10% of injuries that caused campers to leave camp, applicable protective equipment was not being worn in 40% of those injuries. So, for example, that would mean that a helmet was not being worn while a child was on a ropes course. Additionally, appropriate training had not been received by either the camper themselves or the staff member that was leading the activity in an additional 15.6% of those serious injury events. So obviously that's a really obvious potential intervention point to prevent injuries. And then there's a gender component, of course, associated with injuries in the camp setting, just like we see in injuries everywhere else. Well, what are the limitations of this study? As I told you, I think the main limitation of this is truly a convenient sample. One of the other difficulties is the American Camp Association is one national governing body for summer camps, but it's not the only one. There are a plethora of governing bodies. We do not limit participation to ACA-associated camps, but the largest majority of the camps that do participate with us are ACA-associated, because the ACA helps us solicit participation. So, you know, the limitation, we're not sure how representative our data is. It's difficult to test that because it's hard to get a really good idea of what the entire sample looks like. So again, at this point, we feel pretty comfortable that we're at least providing the best data available to date because of the large size of our sample and because it's so geographically dispersed. We have camps from Alaska to Florida to Maine and everywhere in between participating. We even have a few camps from Canada that just wanted to participate so badly. These summer camp peoples are so enthusiastic that we let them participate. They can get a report at the end of the year for their individual camp and the big summer report for all U.S. camps, so they can compare what's going on to their camp with U.S. camps, but we chunk them out of the data set when we analyze our data. Another limitation, as I said, is the vast variety of reporters. We could do a much different type of medical survey if we knew that we had a medically trained clinician available at each camp to serve as the reporter, if we knew we had a physician, if we knew we had a nurse, a practitioner, or some other type of well-qualified medical professional. But we don't, so that is another limitation. We're a little limited in how detailed we can get the actual information about the injury in terms of diagnoses, etc. And the other issue is that in terms of a surveillance study, we're a baby. We've been around for 3 years now. They have dedicated funding for at least 2 more years. They're working on getting additional funding to keep this system going. But we all know that the true value of a limitation of a, I'm sorry, the true value of a surveillance study is being able to look at trends and patterns over long periods of time. So I wanted to linger a little bit on the conclusion side of this more than the research results, because those are fairly straightforward, I think. We do think that the Healthy Camp study is important because it's one of the first studies to really start looking at this issue of health and safety in the summer camp setting. I presented a poster a couple days ago on illnesses in summer camp using some of this data, and I can't tell you how many people stopped by the poster, not to look at the results, but to say, oh, when I was an EIS officer, I investigated an outbreak of at a summer camp, or when I was with the health department in this state, we had a huge outbreak associated with these camps. So it seems like this is a common experience, but again, because of both the misperception that camps are a safe place and the lack of the public health society identifying summer camps as an opportunity to get in there and do some very good public health work, I think that our study is one of the first studies to really start advancing the science in trying to keep kids as safe and healthy as possible while they're at summer camps. In injury prevention, you know, I hate reading off the slides, but I think this really sums it up. Our goal literally is to maximize the positive impact that the summer camp experience imparts to children by reducing injury rates and injury severity. The same talk that I give, the same little soundbite I give when I talk about my sports injury research is that we definitely don't want any parent to read our results or hear about our results and say, I'm not going to let my kid go to summer camp. It's too dangerous. Quite the opposite. We know that the positive that they pull away from the camp experience way outweigh the relatively minor risk of them being injured at camp. However, we know that we can reduce that rate of injury and the severity of injury, so why shouldn't we be trying to do so? And our future work is really going to be focused on identifying effective, targeted, preventive interventions. And we know that to do so, we need high-quality surveillance data. And I'm very, very excited about this project, specifically because I think it is a great example of a collaborative effort. I'm currently an academic researcher. I have the time, the expertise, and the all of the tools that I need to do surveillance research. But I don't have the knowledge of summer camps. I'm not an expert in summer camps. The American Camp Association is. They know everything about summer camps, but they don't have the knowledge and the expertise, the time, the wherewithal to do the research. So working together with them is a perfect example of using the community constituents to drive the most successful injury work. And you can't do any injury work without having funding. The ACA was able to convince Markel Insurance Company, an insurance company that insures the vast majority of summer camps in the United States, to actually underwrite this. Phenomenal to me, the ACA got Markel Insurance Company to give them $5 million for the 5-year Healthy Camp study. We're a very small subcontracted piece of that. What they're using this information for is to conduct surveillance and then use that surveillance data to drive evidence-based interventions. And a great example of it, we had our first 2 years of data collection. After the first 2 years of data collection, we presented all of the results to the ACA. We kind of helped them interpret the data to highlight areas that we felt represented high burden areas, but they stepped back and looked at the data from the perspective of summer camp. And they identified 3 priority areas that they wanted to address this year. They wanted to address infectious diseases, communicable diseases that were actually transmitted to other individuals in the camp setting. They know that kids are going to get sick, but they wanted to prevent the spread of illness in the camp setting. They identified the slip, trip, fall injuries because they represented the biggest burden. And then for staff members, I didn't show this information, they actually identified laceration cut injuries because there were so many of them. Everything from breaking down boxes to chopping wood to playing with lawnmowers to, you know, chopping vegetables in the kitchen. A lot of cut laceration injuries, a much higher rate than we see in like the food service industries. So they identified those 3 areas. They used our input to develop educational interventions widely distributed those interventions in a format that was appropriate for and accessible to camp directors and camp first aid, the people responsible for health and first aid at camps. And that those interventions were distributed this last summer, our third year of data collection. Now I'm very excited. We'll have two additional years of data collection to evaluate the effectiveness of those interventions. We're going to be able to see if we can lower the rate of spread of communicable diseases. We're going to see if we can reduce the number of slip, trip, fall injuries. And again, showing why it's so important to have collaboration. Coming from the public health side, if I had heard slip, trip, fall injuries were one of the big injuries, I would have started talking to them about lighting pathways, having non-slip tread on stairs, making sure that trails were, you know, unobstructed by rocks and roots, things like that, right? They looked at it and they said, wow, you know what we think the problem is? We think it's because kids aren't wearing appropriate footwear for the activities that they do at camp. That too often kids show up at summer camp in one pair of flip-flops, and that's the only pair of shoes they have. So they're trying to do everything from being at the beach or the dock to playing softball to hiking in the mountains and everything in between in that one pair of flip-flops. So the intervention, incredibly simple, and I can't wait to see if it's effective, they literally just included an improved packing list that they send home to the parents before the kids come to camp, identifying exactly what kinds of activities the kids would be doing and what the appropriate and required footwear for those activities was. And they also started shoe banks. So if a kid does show up at camp without a pair of hiking boots, there's a pair of hiking boots that they can hopefully try to borrow for the day. An incredibly simple intervention. I can't wait to see if it works. So obviously we have our individual camp reporters that we couldn't do without. There is a Healthy Camp Study Advisory Committee. The American Camp Association is the organizing organization behind this, and then Markel Insurance Company funds us. And I believe we have some time for questions.
I think we have 3 minutes for question and answers. Anybody?
Animals? Did you do a breakdown by age of the various types of injuries, thinking that younger kids might have more falls?
Yes. Yes, yeah. And for anybody that would like to, I have copies that we actually produce a summary report at the end of each camp year where, you know, it's this thick. I'm more than happy to show you. They're also publicly available. If anybody would like, contact me, or you can go to our website at the Center for Injury Research and Policy at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and you can access all. It's public information. We want to share it. We want to distribute it. We want to let others learn from what we've learned so far. And yeah, we do see age-related patterns of injury, both in terms of the injury events and the risk factors for injury. Yes?
All the way back there.
Yeah, question I have. Did you exclude extreme sport camps in your study? And also, do you have a breakdown of how many injuries require your department to talk to attendance?
Yes, let me address the second question first. Yeah, our survey does, in fact, ask about where the injury was treated. Was it treated on site by the available staff? And if so, what was the level of available staff? So was it something that could be treated on site because they had a camp physician? Or was it something that had to go off site because they didn't have a camp physician? So it's two different levels of data collection. One is what was the highest level of medical professional who provided care? And the other one is where they had to go to receive care. So I can tell you exactly how many, for example, went to an emergency department, how many needed to be treated by a physician, et cetera. And the other question about excluding extreme sport camps, at this point, the only exclusionary criteria that we're actually applying is we are excluding camps that are specifically designed for and limited to children with health issues or disabilities because of the difficulty of morphing that into everything else. So for example, a camp specifically for kids with asthma, or you know, something like that. We're not excluding extreme sport camps, but we can pull out the data and compare it to the computer camp. Yeah, this is a huge challenge because there's such a variety in types of camps.
Just one more question.
Yeah, our main breakdown, we always pull the data apart by resident camp versus day camp. But there are many other potential distinctions in the type of camp that are interest of interest both to me as a injury prevention researcher, but are also of interest to the American Camp Association, because they want to learn how to best develop interventions and how to best regulate camps when it's appropriate. So we can break down the data in a variety of ways. We can break it down by the age group of the camper, by the type of activity that the camp is focused on, by the geographic area, even by whether it's a for-profit camp or a non-profit camp, whether it's a religious-based camp or not. Pretty much any way you want to break it down, we have that capacity. So if you're interested, let me know. I'll break down the data for you and give it to you. Thank you for your time today.
I forgot to mention that there's a slight change in the order of presentation. Our next presenter will